it was very much my honor to teach in Darchei Bina, and I want to give a tremendous yashar koach to Rabbi and Mrs. Kurland for the wonderful Mosad of Torah and Chinuch that they have put together. And I know that indeed most of you have spent time in Eretz Yisrael in one place or another, and I know that one of the great difficulties that all of us have, I include myself, is to how do you adjust to Chutz La'aretz after experiencing the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And there are really two answers. One answer is, you got to go back. The other answer is that until you are able to go back, you at least try to recapture a little bit of that ruach with your friends, with your colleagues, with your chaverot, with the shiurim, with the rebbeim, and the rebbetzins that so inspired you. And Baruch Hashem, this is a little bit of an effort in that particular direction. You know, it is said that in every language, the concepts that are most central to that culture have many, many words. So I'm told that Eskimos have 300 different words for snow. And because of this, because snow and ice are such a central part of their lives, they can look at two pieces of snow that to us would be the same thing, and they see nuances and facets of that different reality that literally does not appeal to us at all. Well, in Yiddishkeit, of course, we have many, many names for Hashem, because we are so censored on our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And also, every Yom Tov, in a sense, is very, very different. You know, part of our spiritual impoverishment is, you know, we know there are weekday times and there are holiday times, but we don't always have a sense for the unique facets of what is a Yom Tov. What does a Yom Tov represent? Every Yom Tov, of course, Purim is not exactly a Yom Tov, but every sacred moment in Yiddishkeit is, of course, sacred. But the nature of the Kedusha is very, very different. And what I want to talk about today, this is the Inyan HaDiyoma, is some perspectives on the uniqueness of Purim. That Purim is, of course, a very happy day. It's a day in which people sometimes get a little inebriated. It's a day in which we wear masquerades, and at least in some circles, not that I advocate this, you smoke and you drink and the like. But obviously, what is behind it all, and what does Purim represent? So there are really two essential themes that I want to call to your attention. These themes are probably familiar, and I'll just be amplifying a basic structure that I think you're familiar with. And that is, at its foundation, Purim commemorates two distinct ideas that are all ultimately related. One is the downfall of the power of Amalek. Amalek represents not just the nation, but Amalek represents an ideology, an ideal, the concept of Lo Yirei Elokim, of not wanting to have reverence for God, a hatred of holiness in the world, indeed a desire to uproot the Malchus of Hashem in the world. And Haman, of course, comes from Amalek, and therefore on a very, very basic level, Purim is a celebration of the ultimate downfall of Amalek. That is theme number one. In fact, the Magen Avraham writes that if a person did not hear Parshas Zachor, on the Shabbos before Purim, they should go to shul, besides the Megillah, when they read the Torah reading on Purim. It's V'yavo Amalek. That's about Amalek attacking us. Because on Purim too, we can fulfill the idea of Mechias Amalek. The second theme of Purim is the theme of concealment, of seeing God not in the miraculous and the supernatural, but seeing God in the ordinary, in the concealment. We know, of course, the Gemara tells us, Esther min ha-Taira minayin, what is the remez in the Taira that there will be someone like Esther Hamalka and the miracle of Purim? So it's based on the pasuk, Anochi Aster Aster Panai B'yomo, where Hashem says, I will conceal myself. Esther comes from the Lashon of Hester. And of course we know the name of Hashem is not in Megillas Esther. And Purim is the only one of our Yomim Tovim that really is a Golus Yom Tov. It happened after the Churban by Israel. Granted, Pesach on a literal level also happened outside of Eretz Israel, but that was on the way. That was Yetzias Mitzrayim on the way. Purim is punked in the middle of the Churban, because Purim represents the Hanhaga of Hashem that is Benister, and that's very, very important for us, because we live in a time of great Hester Panim. We live in a time where Hashem does not operate necessarily by splitting the Red Sea or bringing 10 plagues in an open, obvious way. And a person might ask, as people often ask, where is God? Why doesn't God intervene? Why doesn't God show us His face? And the second theme of Purim is the theme of learning to see Hashem in the concealment, in the darkness, in the ambiguity, in the grays of life. So, if you walk away with just kind of a two-sentence summary of what I'm saying, basically it's probably a familiar structure, and that is Purim deals with two ideas. One is the eradication of Amalek, and the other is seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Nister, which is especially appropriate for Golos, which above all is a time of darkness and Hester Panim. And again, just as a matter of definition, please understand, as I'm sure you do, that the idea of Golos does not necessarily correlate with physical adversity. Baruch Hashem, we in the United States tend not to have a physical adversity, so to speak, although again September 11th shows us that even the great United States of America is not immune from the sufferings that come to the world through Amalek, through Rishayim. But keep in mind that Golos is not merely physical adversity. Golos is spiritual estrangement from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as all of you probably have experienced coming back from Eretz Yisrael, sometimes the Golos of material affluence and comfort can be a much greater Golos than even the Golos of poverty and adversity. The great Hasidic Rebbe once remarked, it was easier to be Jewish in Siberia than suburbia. Because in Siberia, you really had no choice. You couldn't escape being a Jew, whether you wanted to or not. In suburbia, it's very easy to drop by the side. So we are in Golos. And the truth of the matter is that even though in Eretz Yisrael, perhaps we're less of Golos, the Makom HaShechina, but in Eretz Yisrael, we're in Golos too, until we have a Beis HaMikdash, until we have a Geula, until we have Mashiach, we are in Golos. And maybe one could be margish, a greater Golos, even in Eretz Yisrael, precisely because they're closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they have a sensitivity for what's missing that we might miss in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, the Yesod of Purim is to see the Hanhagas Hashem, and the Chasdei Hashem, and the love of Hashem, and the concern of Hashem, even in Hester Panim. Okay, so these are the two basic ideas. So now I just want to go back and develop each of these ideas somewhat. Let's first take the notion of the eradication of Amalek. We know that Chazal were mesaking that for the 4 weeks before Pesach, we have four special Shabbosos. Two of those special Shabbosos are before Purim, and two of those Shabbosos are after Purim. Parsha Shkalim, Parsha Sachar, is before Purim, and Parshas Para, Parshas HaChodesh, are after Purim. I'm not going to talk about the post-Purim Parshios, we'll leave that for another talk, but I want to talk about the fact that Parshas Shkalim and Parshas Zachor are actually a necessary precursor for Purim. And how is that so? So Rav Tzadok of Lublin explains very, very beautifully that the truth of the matter is when we talk about eradicating Amalek, we normally look at the Amalek that's outside there, the enemy that tries to destroy us. We got to get rid of him. But in truth, there's also an Amalek within us. There's a power of evil or a capacity of evil that is within us. And the real Mechias Amalek has to be eradicating the Amalek within us. And only when we eradicate the Amalek within us does the Amalek outside of us lose his kayach. And therefore, just as we say, Biur Chametz is the Chametz Shebelev, so too Mechias Amalek focuses primarily on the Amalek within us. In other words, the Kayach of Amalek has an achiza, has an ability to grab onto us, because there's something within us in which it has a Sheiches. Because Amalek has no Sheiches to Kedusha. Amalek has no power over goodness. Amalek has no power over righteousness and holiness. But to the extent that there is within us a little bit of nitzitz, a little bit of shemetz of what the kayach of Amalek is, that gives Amalek the ability to grab onto it and perhaps even to destroy us, unless we're zocha to the rachamei shemayim. And therefore Rav Tzadok understands that the two parshiyos which precede Purim, Parsha Shkalim and Parsha Zachor, are designed to prepare us to receive the redemption of Purim and the downfall of Amalek by helping us focus on that koach of Amalek within us. Parsha Zachor, of course, does it explicitly, but even Parsha Shkalim focuses on that koach of Amalek within us. How is that so? Well, let's take Parsha Shkalim first. We read it 2 weeks ago. The Gemara tells us, of course, why do we read Parsha Shkalim? Because we're told every year Jews have to give a half shekel to the Beis HaMikdash for the purchase of korbanos. And the fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash begins in the month of Nisan, meaning from Nisan onwards, all korbanos have to be purchased from new money. You can't use the old money. And therefore they started collecting the Shkalim in Adar so they'd have enough new money to buy new korbanos. And that's why it says, B'yachod B'Adar, on the first day of Adar, that's when we start announcing the collection of the half shekel. So the Gemara says in Megillah the following, Galoi, in the name of Reish Lakish, Galoi v'yadua lefnei mi sha'amar v'haya ha'olam. It was known and revealed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Haman would try to kill the Jewish people by giving Achashverosh shkalim. Remember it says in the Megillah, Aseres alafim kikar kesef. And the shkalim would be the instrumentality by which Haman would get power over us. Therefore Hashem said, let Bnei Yisrael give their shkalim first to counteract Haman's shkalim. And that's why Haman gave his shkalim for the month of Adar later in the month. We give our shkalim earlier. L'chari, the Gemara on a literal level is very difficult to understand. I mean, first of all, Haman gave his shkalim to Achashverosh. We're giving our shkalim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And besides, when I give my machtos a shekel this year, it's not before Haman gave it. Haman gave it before I gave it, right? So what does it mean, I give my shkalim before Haman? And Rav Tzaddok says that you have to understand the Gemara on a deeper, more symbolic level. And that is, it's Yadua that the name of Hashem does not appear in Megillas Esther. But there is a Messiah that every time it says the word Melech without saying Achashverosh, it refers, Beremez, to Melech Malchei Hamlochim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that means the following. When you read a Pasuk in Megillah, Vayomer Haman LaMelech, you have to translate that verse in two different meanings. One meaning is the physical human being named Haman said to the physical king named Achashverosh. That's Pshuto Shel Mikra. But you also have to read it that something's going on in Shemayim. That the Koach of Amalek, the Malach of Amalek, is Makatreg on Klal Yisrael by whatever is said. So what does the Pasuk say? Vayaymer Haman LaMelech. Haman says to the Melech, Yeshno Am Echad, there is one nation, Mefozer Mefayred Bein Ha'amim, that is scattered and divided. V'daseim Shonos Mikalam, and their laws are different than everyone else's. They don't mix. They keep to themselves. V'yastasei HaMelech Einam Osim, and they don't keep the laws of the king. When you translate that pasuk, you got a double meaning. Meaning number one, the physical Haman is saying to the physical Achashverosh, these Jews don't mix in your society, they think they're better than you, they separate, like the Gemara says, if a fly goes into their wine, they just throw out the fly and drink the wine, but if you, the king, touch the wine, they throw it away. That's meaning one. But meaning two is the Kayach of Amalek says to Hashem, these people are not deserving of your salvation. Because Mephozer and Mephored doesn't just mean because they're separated, they're politically weak, but they are separated among themselves. They have sinas chinam, they have hatred, they have animosity, they have lack of achdus, they don't come together as a klal. And this was the first Achilles heel, as it still is the Achilles heel, because remember, Amalek was the progenitor, is the ancestor of Golos Edom. Right, Edom, the Romans also come at least from Esav, from the Kayach of Edom, and they destroyed the Bayis Sheni because of Sinas Chinam. And therefore the Mephozer u'Mephored teaches us that one of the spiritual weaknesses that Klal Yisrael had, which made them open to a Chorban, to a Mechiyas Amalek, a Mechiyah of Amalek, was Mephozer u'Mephored. So the Pshat is the following. The Kitrug was Mephozer u'Mephored bein ha'amim, sinas chinam, lack of achdus. That is why when Esther is finally convinced to go and try to be matzil, the first thing she says is Leich kenos es kol ha'yehudim. If you want me to help, we have to rectify that pagam. Let's gather the Jews with achdus. That's why when Chazal established the Yom Tov of Purim, to give Hakara Satov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the eradication of Amalek. They recognized we were only Zoche to eradicate Amalek because we did come together with Avas Yisrael and with Achdus and with compassion and with care for each other. And that is why the mitzvahs of Purim focus so much on Achdus. Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'eu. You give gifts of food from one person to another to create friendship. Matanas Le'Avyonim. You have compassion for those who are downtrodden. All of this, because if the kayach of Amalek over us is because we're mefaizer u'mefairet, so memela in such a case, only by overcoming the mefozer u'mefairet are we zeicha to a hatzala from Amalek. And that is the refuah of the mefaizer u'mefairet. That is why the Gemara says, for example, Ein zarei shel Amalek naifal ela biyad zera Rachel, that Amalek throughout history is only defeated by the children of Rachel and not the children of Leah. That's why we find, for example, Yoshua ben Nun wages war against Amalek in the Midbar. He is from Shevet Ephraim. That is why we find the first melech of the Jewish people was Shaul HaMelech from Shevet Binyamin. He was given the command to eradicate Amalek. He didn't do it. But David was not given such a tzivui because for David, who comes from Leah, from Shevet Yehuda, it wouldn't be shaykh to do. That is why Mordechai and Esther, right? Mordechai and Esther are descended from Shaul. And in effect, Haman is Agagi. He is descended from Agag. So the very thing that Shaul failed to do to Agag, Mordechai and Esther are able to do to Haman. And that is why there's Mashiach ben Yosef before there's Mashiach ben David. Because Mashiach ben Yosef's job is lahachris zarei shel Amalek before there can be Mashiach ben David. And the Gemara says in Bava Basra that Amalek will have its nefila only through Zerah Rachel and not through Zerah Leah. And one of the explanations, there are many different explanations, but one of the explanations is that the Madrega of Leah Imen, of Rachel Imenu was Bedafka, the Madrega of Avas Chinam, in which she was willing to give up her chance to be with Yaakov Avinu by giving the simanim in order not to embarrass her sister, because she loved her sister, because she didn't want her to be hurt and humiliated. And therefore, just as the Medrash says on Rachel Mavakeh Espaneha that the Geula will be in the Zechus Rachel, so too the downfall of Amalek is Bezechus Rachel, because the Achilles heel, which gives Amalek an achiza in us, is Mefozar u'mefored bein ha'amim, the machala of sinas chinam. So, this is what the Gemara means. Hashem gave us the mitzvah of machzis hashekel to counteract the kitrug of mefozar u'mefored. Hashem gives us a mitzvah of machzis hashekel to override those factors that cause sinas chinam and divisiveness among Klal Yisrael. How does Machtis HaShekel overcome that divisiveness? So everyone knows that the two outstanding characteristics of Machtis HaShekel is, number one, everybody must give the same. The rich person cannot give more. Ha'ashir lo yarbe, v'hadal lo yamit. Now, we understand why you can't let the poor guy off, right? You have to pay your minimum, but I've never heard of any fundraising thing that says you're not allowed to give more. You know, if you want to pay more taxes to the federal government, there are, I understand, some people that actually do this, you're allowed to do that, right? I'm sure Rabbi Kurland would be happy to take, you know, more than a minimum donation for Darchei Bina. So what does it mean, the rich person is not allowed to give more? Mehechi Tesi. The answer is this. Because Machzis HaShekel teaches us a fundamental idea that every Jewish neshama is equally precious in the eyes of God. That God does not judge us by how much we accomplish in the abstract compared to others. God judges us by how much of ourselves we have given to Him. That if one person's neshama, if one does not have all of the kochos of somebody else, but one gives their kochos to Avodas Hashem, that is just as beloved as someone who could accomplish much more because they have more kochos. And pumfaker, if a person with many kochos does much more, but he's only working at a fraction of their kochos, indeed in Hashem's book that is less significant. So That itself, Rav Tzadok says, is a tremendous antidote to jealousy and sinna. Because so often, the jealousy and sinna we have is we look at others and we're jealous over someone else's accomplishment, someone else's greatness. They have what I don't have. But the Machzas HaShekel says, like, you know, the great marathon runners often say, they're not running against others. They're just competing against themselves. That Yiddishkeit, all Hashem cares about is you give what you are. And within each person there's a uniqueness and there's a koach and there's a power. And ein malchus nogas b'chaverta afilu kamalei neima, that a kingdom does not overlap another kingdom even by a hair. Everybody has their uniqueness. Everybody has their specialness. Everyone has their koach. And how wasteful and counterproductive it is when I'm always looking at what someone else has, whether it's in Ruchnias or Gashmias, and I never come into contact with the treasure that I myself have. So, the first idea of the Machzas HaShekel is, why be jealous? Why be resentful? Each person is equal in the sense, not of being the same, but each person is equal because each person has a uniqueness and a mission and a koach. And that's why the rich person, even in Ruchnius, doesn't give more, because as far as Hashem is concerned, if each person is doing what they can, that is equally beloved. That's one aspect of Machzas HaShekel. The other aspect of Machzas HaShekel, and I'm sure you've heard this thought, is that it's only a half, right? So the yesod of Machzas HaShekel is, it only becomes complete. A half gets a shleimus only when it's nischaber with someone, something else, right? Two halves make a whole. And that's a lesson that no Jew can ever think their avodas Hashem can be complete unless they're mechaber themselves with the klal. And the reason is, numerically, it's very simple. I mean, a simple numerical cheshbon shows us why this is so. There are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. But some of those mitzvahs only apply to Eretz Yisrael, some are Kohanim, some are men, some are women's. So even if a person is the greatest tzaddik in the world, how do they keep 613 mitzvahs? It's impossible. But it's only impossible if I come to Hashem as a yachid. But when I come to Hashem by being mechaber myself to the klal, and the klal is a klal of transcendental proportions, past, present, future, this eternal entity called Knesset Yisrael, then the mitzvahs of every chelek become my mitzvahs, because just as what I do with my foot is not just my foot's thing, it's my person's thing, what I do with my right hand is not just my right hand, it's me. What is done by Knesset Yisrael is my action if I am mechaber myself to Knesset Yisrael. So, Machzas HaShekel exemplifies a tikkun for the pagam of mefizer u'mefored bein ha'amim in two different ways. And in a way, it's almost paradoxical if you're focusing on these two different ways. One way, through the equality notion, emphasizes my uniqueness, my individuality, my specialness, the fact that I have a chelek that no one else has. In other words, there's no reason to be jealous of someone because the chelek and the malchus that I have is irreplaceable. In other words, that's almost an emphasis on do your own thing in Avodas Hashem, within, of course, the Gedorim of Halacha. But the second aspect reminds us that my shleimus can be obtained only by his chabras to others. And therefore, Rav Tzadok says, this is the meaning of the Gemara. Hashem knew that Haman would give shkalim. So symbolically what that means is, Haman would have a taina to the Ribayna Shalaylam that would give him a shlita, the Amalek Bifnim. And the Amalek Bifnim would be the Mefozer Meforid Bein Ha'amim. So he gave us our shkalim to teach us how to overcome that Mefozer Umeforid Bein Ha'amim. So that is how Parsha Shkalim deals with the first kitrug, the first accusation, the first koach that Amalek has over us. Let's now go to the second aspect. And you might even say the second aspect is even more explicit, because after all, the next Shabbos we're going to be having is Parsha Zachor Mamish, which talks about Timcha as Zecher Amalek. So, what does the pasuk say? Zachor eis asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Baderech b'tzeifcha mi-Mitzrayim, when you left Mitzrayim. Asher korcha baderech, they encountered you in the way. So it's Yadua, Rashi brings from Chazal, that the word korcha, and again there are many meanings of korcha, one is lashon mikra, Amalek doesn't believe that Hashem is involved. Everything is coincidence, everything's happenstance. Amalek, lo yirei elokim, they don't want to see the hand of God in the world. That's very actually, it's a very, very important theme of what Amalek is. But Rashi says, korcha comes from the word Amalek made you cold. What does it mean Amalek made you cold? That when the Jewish people left Egypt, they were like a hot bath. Everybody was scared of him, the Makos. Amalek was the first nation after we left Mitzrayim to jump into a boiling bath. Now what happens when you jump into a boiling bath? You get burnt. And indeed, Amalek got burnt. But they make it a little cooler for the next people. In other words, everybody was afraid to take that first step. Amalek took the first step. It made it easier. Rav Tzadok, again, uses the same taich. Korcha is make you cold. But he has a slightly different twist than Rashi. He says that the shirish of Amalek is coldness in the way we serve Hashem. And as a great chassid, this is a theme that Rav Tzadok, by the way, was born in Misnaget. He became a chassid precisely because of this type of thought, in which he pointed out that it's possible for a person to be a meticulous shomer mitzvahs, shomeris mitzvahs, but to do so with coldness, lack of enthusiasm, lack of passion, going through the motions. You do it because this is what you do. You keep Shabbos because you kept Shabbos last time. And one of the great sicknesses of the soul that we have is the sense of indifference and boredom and rote and hergel and shigra. Of course, this is hardly new. Yeshayahu the Navi, right, remonstrated to the Jewish nation about mitzvahs anashim milumada. That's exactly what it means. You do mitzvahs because it's a habit. We're not inspired. We don't get yinika. And just as a tree could continue to produce, not produce leaves, but it continue to have leaves even after it's dead inside, because it'll be a while. There's still enough stuff in the tree that even after a tree is dead, the leaves will continue to be on the tree for a while. But once it's dead inside, eventually those leaves are going to wither. So too, chas v'shalom, it is possible for a person who's going through the motions to be spiritually dead. And Rav Tzadok says, that is the meaning of asher korcha baderech. Amalek is that force in the human personality that leads to deadness, to coldness, to lack of feeling, lack of hergish, lack of sensitivity. And where does that come from? What in our modern world leads to that lack of hergish? So Rav Tzadok says, and again, I'm using the pre-tzadok here for most of what I'm saying. Rav Tzadok says that comes from an overinvestment in the materialism of Olam Hazeh. Now again, we know that Judaism as a religion is not averse to enjoying this world. In fact, we say the Nazir is a chote, the Nazir is a sinner because he's depriving himself of legitimate pleasures. There's even a famous Talmud Yerushalmi that says, a person is going to have to give a din v'cheshbon to Hashem for every pleasure in this world that he could have enjoyed and didn't enjoy. Rav Hirsch used to say, of course he lived near the Alps, that Hashem is going to ask us after 120 years, did you admire the Alps? I put them there for you to look at them and admire them and get pleasure from them. And Hashem says everything is kitov in Bria. So in Yiddishkeit, the goal is not, of course, to reject the beauties of this world and the pleasures of this world, but to enjoy them with an appreciation of Hakaras HaTov, of the godless Habore. Rabbi Victor Miller Zatzal, you know, just passed away recently. He wrote classic essays based on the Chayvus HaLevavos, the Shahar HaBitachon, who was really the first sefer that dealt with it in a comprehensive way, how you have to appreciate Hashem from the physical world. Rabbi Miller has a whole 20-page description of what you should think about when you eat a banana. I could not do it justice, but he talks about the color and everything else. In fact, I read recently a maisa about him that once his granddaughter came home and his head was submerged in the sink, underwater. And she was really horrified. And she said, "Daddy, what's going on?" He says, "You know, I was walking with somebody in the streets in Brooklyn, and that person said, you know, the air isn't so good today. And I felt bad because I always have hakaras hatov for the air, and this person put a thought in my mind that I'm less grateful for the gift of air. So what did I do? I put my head under water for as long as I could. And then when I took my head out, I said, you know, the air is really good. Baruch Hashem, we have air." You know, so the concepts, so again, my point is that obviously the concept is not to deprive ourselves of physical pleasure. But we have to recognize at the same time that the more invested we are in materialism, the more involved we are in stuff, the less sensitive our souls are going to be to the beauties of Ruchnius and Avodas Hashem. We become corroded. We become jaded. We become bored. And the reason is very simple. Because material gratifications are instant gratifications. Nintendo, Huckleberry Finn is not going to be exactly as enjoyable. Then Kal V'chomer, Ben Beno Shel Kal V'chomer. The more, just as someone with a junk food diet is not going to enjoy the subtleties of fancy food. Kal V'chomer, if we feed ourselves a diet of the superficial, non-thinking junk that is out there. Possessions, power, money, which all of which have their place, but when they control you, the neshama is not going to be receptive. So Rav Tzadok says, therefore, that if Parshas Zachor, see, Parshas Shkalim is focusing on the pagam of lack of achdus. Parshas Zachor, he says, is focusing on krirus halev, and krirus halev, lack of enthusiasm. That comes from the taivas, from being involved in the taivas of Olam Hazeh. And therefore, in effect, Parshas Shkalim and Parshas Zachor are eradicating the two kitrugim, the two internal amaleks that allow us to be zocha to the downfall of the external amalek. Now, how is that celebrated on Purim? Because you might ask Akasha. Bishlama, the first pagam of Mephozer, Mephorad, we celebrate on Purim by Shalach Manos, Matanas Liavyonim, which is Achdus and unity, right? So that's kind of overcoming that aspect of Amalek. Lech Knos es Kol HaYehudim. But to the extent that the pagam of Amalek is the Kriris Halev, so where do you see in Purim that we overcome the Kriris Halev? The answer is because Chazal tell us that something else happened on Purim besides the hanging of Haman, or besides the defeat of the enemies. That is, Purim was the day of Kabbalah Satorah. It says, Kiyamu v'kiblu. They accepted on Purim what they had already accepted on Shavuos many years before. Now what's the difference? The Gemara tells us that the Kabbalah Satorah on Shavuos was done by force, by compulsion. Kafa aleihem har kigigis. God held the mountain over our heads like a barrel. Purim, we accepted out of love what we had previously accepted out of fear. Now, here is the thing. First of all, let me just mention an important Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash Tanchuma asks the Kasha, how can I say the Kabbalah Satira of Shavuos was a Kabbalah Satira out of fear? Didn't B'nai Yisrael say Naseh V'Nishma? They said Naseh V'Nishma. They said, we will do without even knowing. So they vada were makabal out of love. So there are a lot of answers to that question, but the Medrash Tanchuma says that Nasa v'Nishma goes only on Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav they accepted willingly. Torah Shebal Peh they had to be forced. And the difference is, because Torah Shebichsav is easy in some ways. The Torah says don't do work on Shabbos, okay, so I'll go to the mall, right? I won't go to my work, as it were. Torah Shebal Peh is Masbir, Lamates Melachos, what you can do, what you can't do. But also the Medrash tells us that Torah Shebal Peh is also something that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort, because Torah Shebal Peh is the attempt to apply the words of Hashem to new situations, to extrapolate, to unearth principles. It requires creativity and inventiveness and diligence and hasmada and work. And that the Jewish people were not willing to accept. They were willing to accept that which was given to them on a silver platter. But they were not willing to accept that which they had to work for and try to understand. Now, it turns out like this. If Purim is Kabbalah's HaTorah bi'ahava, for what was previously accepted by duress, and if what was previously accepted by duress is Torah Shebal Peh, then it turns out that the thing that we accepted on Purim out of love was the Torah Shebal Peh. And now you see how that directly counteracts the concept of coldness. Because when you accept something out of fear, you only do the minimum you can get away with. In other words, you're only doing it, I don't want to get punished, I'll do the minimum. You tell me to wash one dish, I'll wash one dish. When you accept something out of love, you accept it with enthusiasm and excitement. And since Purim is the commemoration of Machias Amalek, and Amalek represents coldness of the heart, so the same way when we were saved from Amalek, we got together with Achdus to counteract the first problem, so too when we're saved from Amalek, we counteract the coldness and lack of enthusiasm by being Mekabel the Torah of love. And by the way, let me just say that the concept that lack of enthusiasm is a sherish of Amalek, you see not only in the word Korcha, but you actually see it in Rephidim. Rephidim is where we were attacked by Amalek. And Rephidim is an acronym for Rafu Yadayim, their hands were loose. When you don't care about something that much, you hold on to it loosely, kind of in indifference. So these are kind of two basic lessons on my first theme, and that is to the extent that Purim is a celebration of the downfall of Amalek. And unfortunately, again, it's not so clear who I can identify as Amalek. Again, what is Amalek Bisman Hazeh as an external force is actually a very, very complicated area. One has to be careful, I think, not to always label Amalek anyone that does something bad to the Jewish people. After all, Chazal clearly differentiates between the Koach of Esav and the Koach of Amalek. I'm sorry, the Koach of Yishmael, rather, and the Koach of Amalek. And indeed, much of our Tzaros Bizman Hazeh come from the Koach of Yishmael, which is actually a distinct Koach. So one has to be careful not to indiscriminately lump different things together. But to the extent that we are focusing on the Koach of Amalek, the Koach of evil in the world, let us remember that above all, our Koach over the outside is Toloi on our Koach over the inside. And therefore, indeed, we have to work on both the lessons of Parshas Shkalim and the lessons of Parshas Zohar, to be Zocha, to be Mocha, the Amalek Bifnim, and then we can be Zocha to a Mechias Amalek Mibachutz. Now let me move to the second theme, which I want to address for a few moments. The second theme of Purim is the concept of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only in the open and obvious and supernatural, but seeing Hashem in the Nister as well. There's a beautiful pshat that one of the Mefarshim says. You know, we have the famous Gemara that says, Chayav Adam Livsume Bepuria. A person must imbibe, must enjoy, must drink on Purim, Adalo Yada, till they don't know the difference, Bein Oror Haman Leboruch Mordechai, between the phrase, Cursed be Haman, and blessed be Mordechai. Now the Ramah takes the fun out of that a little bit by saying, you drink until you get a little tired, and then you fall asleep. When you're asleep, you don't know the difference. But that's a mudna thing. I mean, if that's what Chazal meant, just say until you go to sleep or whatever it is. By the way, women are generally not advised to do this particular mitzvah in a literal sense. And the truth is, for most yeshiva bachrim, that same advice is probably in order. But be it as it may, what is the idea of not knowing the difference? I shouldn't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. So one of the Mefarshim says the following idea. The Gemara tells us, Gadol hasaras hatabas, yaiser mimemches neviim, v'sheva neviyes. When Achashverosh took off his signet ring and gave it to Haman, which is the authority that Haman has to kill the Jews, that did more good for the Jewish people than 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses. Because all of the 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses are always telling us, do tshuva, do tshuva, do tshuva, do tshuva. We never listen. But when that ring goes off Achashverosh's finger, Leich Knosis Kol HaYehudim, tremendous hisiris of tshuva, Kabbalah, Satira, everything else. Haman's ring did more good for us, the Gemara says, than all the prophets. So what's the pshat? The pshat is like this. When we are misbonein in the Chastei Hashem of Purim, we tend to focus on the chesed of Hashem in saving us from Haman's destructive, nefarious plot. But we don't have Hakara Satov for being put through such a gezeira. But if you think about it very, very deeply, in point of fact, we have to have Hakara Satov, not to Haman, of course, but we have to have Hakara Satov not only for the Geula at the end, but even for the Nisayon, even for the tribulation. Because if it was the Geula that saved us, it was the process of adversity and suffering that gave us a hisayiris of tshuva. That's a gamzu l'tova, meaning it's not like you think, well, gee, we're grateful that we're saved and we're just exactly in the same position we would have been had Haman never been on the scene. No! Because of that gezeira of Haman, there was a transformation in our relationship. And therefore, the meaning of the Gemara, chaya av adam lefsumei b'poria, a person has to reach a madrega of simcha, in which he understands a gamzu l'tova not only in the hatzala that Mordechai brought me, but a gamzu l'tova even in the gezeira of Haman, because that was the hisayiris of tshuva. And this is a big yisai, because in every life, collectively and individually, there are adversities, there are setbacks, there are frustrations. Sometimes these are very, very serious. Sometimes they might not be so serious, but they hurt the person nevertheless. You didn't, you know, get the grade you wanted in something, whatever it might be. And we often get frustrated, we might get bitter, we might have tinnitus. But we have to understand that one of the lessons of Purim is that even in that adversity, and even in that failure, and even in that frustration, are the seeds of transformation, the seeds of growth. Gamzu l'tova. Gamzu l'tova does not mean everything will turn out the way I want it to turn out. Unfortunately, life isn't that way. Gamzu l'tova doesn't always mean it'll have a happy ending in the sense of the ending I want it to be. But gamzu l'tova does mean that everything that happens in our lives is guided by the Ribono Shel Olam. And we have the opportunity to respond to that challenge with nobility and with greatness and with self-sacrifice. And then we can look back and we can say that this was also a matana that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. This is a very, very high madrega in many cases. Perhaps it's something that we won't always be able to aspire to. But ultimately, through simcha, one can understand that even the Orur Haman was also a bracha, not just the Baruch Mordechai. And that's the idea of seeing the Yad of Hashem, even in the adversity, even in the negative. Rav Futner used to explain that was the meaning of the Gemara. The Gemara says in Megillah, why don't we recite Hallel on Purim? And it gives a few answers. But one of the answers why we don't recite Hallel on Purim is because reading the Megillah itself is how we fulfill Hallel. we fulfill Hallel by reading the Megillah itself. Well, how is reading the Megillah Hallel? So Rav Huttner explains that Hallel has to match the type of miracle that you have. When you have an open, obvious, supernatural miracle where Hashem is obvious, you have to read Hallel in which Hashem is obviously praised. Purim is not a type of miracle that is so obvious. Think about it. You know, we read the Megillah so we think everything happened right away. It happened over many years. Ahasuerus kills Vashti. No particular miracle. Kings were always killing their wives in those days. That's not a nation in and of itself. Mordechai happens to overhear Bigson Viseresh. All right, that's recorded. Esther is taken as a queen. Now, contrary to the way secular people read this, that was not a simcha. One can rest assured. Esther, who was a tzadekas, who was married to a Gadol Hador, is forcibly taken to a goy. One can regard this as perhaps the greatest tragedy of her life up to that point. A tragedy. Everything looks like either coincidence or tragedy or rejection, and then comes Haman years later. It's only in retrospect we see how Hashem fit every piece to bring Geulah. Rav Huttner says, because Purim is Nes Nistar, you have to praise Hashem with a Hallel Nistar. The Hallel of Purim is not open Hallel. The Hallel of Purim is hidden Hallel, because it's a Nes Nistar. So what I'm suggesting is that Purim is a Nes Nistar in two different ways. It's Nistar because every single event could have been chalked up to coincidence. It's not like Pesach. And it's Nistar because you have to recognize that even the adversity was a chesed of Hashem, because it brought us the tshuva, right? Those are two different aspects of Nistar, both of which very much apply to our situation. And that is why Purim is the holiday of Golus. It's the only one of our holidays that is totally based in Golus. Chanukah was in Eretz Yisrael, because Golus is Hester Panim. And Purim reminds us to see the Yad Hashem in Hester Panim. That is why on Purim we wear masquerades, we wear masks and costumes. Because that reminds us that there's an inner reality under the surface, that appearances are deceiving. You look at a world and you don't see Hashem. But Hashem is there. Just like when I look at you wearing a mask and I don't see you, but you're under the mask. This world is a world of masks. That is why on Purim we have so much joy. Because it reminds us that as deeply concealed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, He's ultimately here watching us, protecting us, caring about us. In other words, no matter what our Hester is, He is there. That's a tremendous source of Simcha. You know, the Kli Yakor says that this is the meaning of the Pasuk in Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem Elokeinu. Hashem is Yud Kei Vav Kei, that's Midas HaRachamim. Elokeinu is Midas HaDin, Elokim. Hashem Elokeinu. In this life, we see Rachamim sometimes, we see Din sometimes, but it's Hashem Echad. Ultimately, it's all Midas HaRachamim. Ultimately, it's all the Yud Kei Vav Kei. So, these are kind of the ideas that we think about in Purim, and this is even the meaning of the well-known Gemara, I'm sorry, it's a Medrash, not a Gemara, that says, all of the Yamim Tovim will become null and void, will become batel, except for Purim. Right, I'm sure you've heard that. All the Yamim Tovim will become batel except for Purim. Now, there's a kasha on this. If you understand this literally, there's a difficulty. Because one of the Yud Gimel Ikrei Amunah is that the Torah shall never be annulled, shall never be canceled. That means even when Mashiach comes, right, we're going to keep Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, Shabbos. So what do you mean all the Yamim Tovim are going to be batel except for Purim? So the way the Mefarshim explain it is the following, a very different meaning. They don't mean we're going to stop observing the Yom Tovs. But what it means is there will come a time when the way Hashem revealed Himself in all the other Yamim Tovim, He's not going to reveal Himself like that in our lives. In other words, Pesach, supernatural, open, so obvious. But even when the hanhaga of the other Yamim Tovim will not be the way that Hashem will reveal Himself to us, the way He revealed Himself to us on Purim, we will always have. In other words, the hanhaga of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even Benister, that's a hanhaga that we're always going to have. In other words, that hanhaga will never lose. Every other hanhaga we can lose when we're in Galus, etc. This hanhaga we're never going to lose. So let me just end again with two thoughts of Rav Tzada, both related to these themes. So again, our two themes are eradication of Amalek by working on Achdus and Avas Yisrael, and by overcoming our lack of enthusiasm and the coldness of our hearts. And two, learn to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life. And you know, the Chavos HaLevavos writes that there's a certain catch-22 here. Because the more you try to see Hashem in your life, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu will get involved in your life. The less you see Hashem in your life, the more you chalk up things to Mikra, the more Hashem might let you be Mikra. So it's not a bad thing if one were to identify on a daily basis or a weekly basis things in their lives where they felt that Hashem was guiding them. You know, Hashem doesn't guide you today, unless you're a Navi, maybe, so some of you are, I don't know, but you know, Hashem doesn't guide you by, you know, you hear a voice from heaven saying, do this. It comes from within. In other words, it looks like it's your thought, etc. But you ask yourself, where did Hashem bring me here? Did Hashem bring me, why did Hashem bring me here? How did things work out with Tov? Try to identify it. You know, these are not just things for little kids to do when they come home for third grade, you know. Say three nice things that Hashem did for you today. It's something that we should do, to be mechazek our emunah, to develop our feeling, to talk to Hashem in your own words, besides davening, to talk to Hashem in your own words, a conversation. Sicha. Tefillah is called sicha. And in that way, we can maybe overcome kind of the coldness of our heart, the indifference, the fact that we often go through the motions, which is such a shayrish of Amalek. And in that way, we could be zochet to the gifts that Purim shows us, the gifts of Emunah, the gifts of seeing Hashem, even in the Hester. But the thought I just want to end with is another thought of Rav Tzadok. Rav Tzadok raises the kasha, and maybe some of you who had me in Eretz Yisrael may remember this. I don't know, it's been a while, so I think I can repeat myself on this. And that is that the Gemara tells us that Avraham Avinu was Mesakein Tefilas Shachris, and Yitzchak was Mesakein Tefilas Mincha, and Yaakov was Mesakein Tefilas Arvis. This is what Chazal said. The halacha is that Shachris and Mincha are obligations. Mairiv Me'ikir Hadin was an optional prayer, although it became a minhag. That's why, for example, for women who are supposed to daven Shachris and Mincha, many women are not obligated davening Mairiv, because even for the men who had to daven Mairiv, it was only a minhag, and the minhag was not accepted by women. Masha'en kein Shachris and Mincha is a chiyuv and not just a minhag. Now, Rav Tzadok asks an obvious question. Why should it be that the prayer of Yaakov Avinu is inferior to the prayer of Avram? Avram's prayer is a chiyuv. Yitzchak's prayer is a chiyuv. Yaakov's prayer is a reshus, is optional. Yaakov is the greatest of the Avos, right? Avram had a Yishmael, and Yitzchak had an Esav. Yaakov is mitaso shlema. All of Yaakov's children are tzaddikim, although they had their problems, but they're shklal Yisrael. Why should Yaakov's prayer be a reshus? And here's what Rav Tzadok says, and this is a really, really beautiful thought about davening. You know, we think Shachris, Mincha, Marv, everything's the same, you know, we have our lights, etc. But Rav Tzadok says that the mood and the emotion of Shachris, Mincha, and Mairiv are three different moods and emotions. Shachris, as the sun comes up, is the prayer of hope and gratitude for the blessings that Hashem has given me. And therefore, Shachris is the prayer of Hakara Satov and Hoda'ah. And that's shayach to Avraham Avinu, who was zoche in his lifetime to all the blessings of Hashem. Even Yishmael did tshuva, and he had a child at 100, etc. Sarah died, but granted, Sarah died at 127. She was not a youngster. And then he married Keturah. Even Hagar became a righteous woman. So with Avraham Avinu, everything eventually turned into a great, great bracha. That's the tefillah shachris. And you know, even if you're tired, in the morning, you tend to be optimistic. Everybody kind of feels hopeful in the morning. Now, mincha is as the sun is setting, the shadows are getting longer and longer. That's the prayer of the person who still has what he wants in life, but he feels it's slipping away, he's losing it, and he's afraid it's going to be taken from him. That's why the 400 years of Golos begin with the birth of Yitzchak, because Yitzchak is still living in Eretz Yisrael. But as the sun is going down, the shadows get longer and longer. So mincha is the prayer that you might say that represents anxiety over losing what Hashem has given me. And I ask Hashem, let me hold on to it a little longer. Shachris and mincha, Rav Tzadok says, are prayers that every person can be expected to understand. Every person has to be grateful for what Hashem gives him. And every person has to know to pray to Hashem when they feel they're losing things. Right? The old saying, there are no atheists in foxholes. If you're in a foxhole, you're going to say Shema Yisrael, just in case there is a God. Even if you don't believe it, you know, you're not going to take your chances. But let's look at Ma'ariv. When did Yaakov Avinu misaken Ma'ariv? He's running away because Esav is going to kill him. He thinks he will never see his father again, although the Maaseh, he does see his father again. He will never see his mother again. Eliphaz ben Esav took away all of his wealth. Yaakov doesn't have a shidduch, and he's not a young man, by the way, at this time. He's over 60. And where is he leaving? He's leaving the ruchnius of Eretz Yisrael. And he's going to a makam of tuma. And Yaakov was very afraid of that, because if Esav will kill his guf, Yaakov has a tremendous pachat that Lavan will kill his neshama. You see this very, very often. The fear and the trepidation that Yaakov has, especially when Lavan welcomes him. You're my brother, as Rashi says. You know how to cheat just like me. Imagine, that must have been like a knife in Yaakov Avinu's side. That to be a collaborator, Yaakov the Ish Emes. So, unlike Shachris, which is Hakaras HaTov for the blessings of Hashem, and unlike mincha, where you ask Hashem, let me hold on to your brachas a little longer, Ma'ariv is the prayer of the person who has hit rock bottom. He has nothing. Bederech HaTeva, he has no hope. In logical ways, he's already hit the bottom. It's total darkness. It's not the sun going down. It's dark. Now remember, granted, Yaakov had the vision of the ladder, but that's after he prayed. When he prayed in Chayshech. And therefore Rav Tzadok says, Ma'ariv is the prayer of Emuna. Because when you don't have any logical reason to have hope, the last thing you have is Emuna. And therefore he says, you know why Ma'ariv is an optional prayer? It's an optional prayer, not because it's less important, but the madrega it represents is such a high madrega that we should try to work towards it, but it's not something that everybody could be expected to reach right away. Shachris and Mincha, everybody can reach that. But Ma'ariv is the prayer of Emuna. To see not only the light at the end of the tunnel, but to see the light even in the tunnel. To see the bracha even in the darkness. And that is why, after Kriya Shema of the morning, we say Emes V'Yatziv, God's truth is firm and established. And after Kriya Shema at night, we say Emes V'Emuna. I don't see God's truth, but I have faith in it. That's why David HaMelech says in Tehillim, L'Hagid B'Boker Chastecha, in the morning of my life, when things are good and clear, I see the Chesed Hashem. V'emunascha v'leilos. But when things are dark and confused, I don't always see the chesed of Hashem right away. But what keeps me going? What keeps me going is Emuna. And Purim is immeasurably powerful. Forgiving is that this Emuna. Because it reminds us, even in the adversity of Haman trying to destroy us, even in the adversity of a righteous woman being taken and raped against her will by an evil king, being separated from her husband, the great tzaddik of the generation. And we don't understand why those things are happening. But through Emunah, we can be assured that we will eventually see the Yad Hashem and the Gamzu L'Tova. In the Midas Hadin, we will see the Chesed of Hashem, B'yomahu Yeh Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad, and Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Rachamim and Din, is Hashem Echad. And this is what we have to recognize, what we are in Golus. And when we see the Yad Hashem, even Behester, we will eventually be Zeicha to see the Yad of Hashem in Goloi as well. So I wish you all a Freilich Purim, much, much Hatzlacha, and may you always keep within your hearts your connection to Eretz Yisrael. And may it warm you and nurture you and be mechazik you as you try to adapt to the difficulties of life in Golus. So thank you. Be well. Thank you.